Chapter 16. Enemy Within. The Eightfold Path. Honour must be satisfied. Apothecary Vadin fought to save Castor's life. The upper half of the warrior's armour had been removed, and his bare torso was disfigured by a gory wound, flaps of skin and chunks of muscle blown aside like the petals of a bloody flower by an exploding bolt-around.
"Pressure!" said Vadin, as he flicked over the settings on his Narthesium gauntlet.
Scalpels and syringes cycled as Brother Mathridon, an Emperor's children Astartes, who had lost a hand in the earlier fighting and served as Vadin's assistant, kept pressure on the wound. Casto bucked underneath him, his teeth gritted against pain that would kill anyone but an Astartes. Vadin selected a syringe and pushed it into Casto's neck. The vial mounted on the gauntlet emptied, pumping Casto's system with stimulants to keep his heart forcing blood around his ruptured organs. Casto shook, nearly snapping the needle.
"Hold him still," snapped Vadin.
"Yes," said a voice behind him.
"Hold him still. It will make it easier to kill him."
Vadin's head snapped up, and he saw a warrior clad in the armor of an Empress Children Lord Commander. He carried an enormous hammer, purple arcs of energy playing around its massive head. Behind the warrior, Vadin could see a score of Emperor's children in purple and gold finery, their armor sheened with lapping powder and oil. Instantly, he knew that these were no loyalists, and felt a cold hand clutch at his chest as he saw that they were undone.
"Who are you?"
demanded Vadin, though he knew the answer already.
"I am your death, traitor," said Eidolon,
swinging his hammer and crushing Vadin's skull with one blow. Hundreds of Emperor's children streamed into the palace from the east, on a tide of fire and blood. They fell upon the wounded first, Eidolon himself butchering those who lay waiting for Vadin's ministrations, taking particular relish in killing the loyalist Emperor's children he found there. The warriors of his chapter swarmed through the palace around him, the defenders discovering to their horror that their flank had somehow been turned, and that more and more of the traitors were pouring into the palace. Within moments, the last battle had begun. The loyalists turned from their defences and faced the Emperor's children. Assault marines' jump packs gunned them across ruined domes to crash into Eidolon's assault units. Heavy weapons troopers and snipers amongst the ruined battlements shot down into the enemy, swapping tremendous volleys of fire across the shattered domes. It was a battle without lines or direction as the fighting spilled into the heart of the Precentor's palace. Each Astartes became an army of his own as all order broke down and every warrior fought alone against the enemies that surrounded him. Emperor's children jet bikes screamed insanely through the precincts of the palace and ripped crazed circuits around the domes, spraying fire into the Astartes battling below them. Dreadnoughts tore up chunks of fallen masonry with their mighty fists and hurled them at the loyalists holding the barricades against which so many of their foes had died only a short while before. Everything was swirling madness, horror, and destruction, with Eidolon at the centre of it, swinging his hammer and killing all who came near him as he led his perfect warriors deeper into the heart of the defences. Luke Sedire, with his blonde hair and smirking grin, looked completely out of place among the rusting industrial spires of the Coral City. Beside him, Sergar Targost, captain of the 7th Company, seemed far more at home, his older, darker skin and heavy fur cloak more in keeping with a murdered world. Sedire stood on top of a rusting slab of fallen machinery before thousands of sons of Horus arrayed for war. War paint was fresh on their breastplates, and new banners dedicated to the warrior lodges flapped in the wind.
"Sons of Horus!"
bellowed Sedire, his voice brimming with the confidence that came to him so easily.
"For too long we have waited for our brother legions to open the gate for us, so we can put the doubters and the feeble-minded to the sword. At last the hour has come! Lord Commander Eidolon has broken the siege, and the time has come to show the legions how the sons of Horus fight!"
The warriors cheered, and the lodge banners were raised high, displaying the facets of the beliefs underpinning the lodge philosophies. A brazen claw reached down from the sky to crush a world in its fist. A black star shone 8 rays of death upon a horde of enemies, and a great winged beast with 2 heads stood resplendent on a mountain of corpses. Images from beyond, conjured by the words of Davinite priests, who could look into the warp, They displayed the sons of Horus's allegiance to the powers their warmaster embraced.
"The enemy is in disarray," shouted Cedere over the cheering. "We will fall upon them and sweep them away. You know your duties, sons of Horus, and you all know that the paths you have followed have led you towards this day. For here we destroy the last vestiges of the old crusade and march towards the future."
Cedere's confidence was infectious, and he knew they were ready. Targost stepped forward and raised his hands. He bore the rank of lodge captain himself, privy to the secrets of the Davenite ways, and as much a holy man as a commander. He opened his mouth and unleashed a stream of brutal syllables, guttural and dark, the tongue of Davin, wrought into a prayer of victory and blood. The sons of Horus answered the prayer, their voices raised in a relentless chant that echoed around the dead spires of the Coral City. And when the prayers were done, the sons of Horus marched to war. Fire stormed around Tarvitz. Emperor's children Terminators raked the central dome with fire, and the sounds of brutal hand-to-hand combat came from the shattered gallery. Tarvitz ducked and ran as bolt of fire kicked up fragments around him, sliding into cover beside Brother Solothan of Squad Nasikay. Solothan and about 30 loyalist Emperor's children were pinned down behind a great fallen column, a few lunar wolves among them.
"What in the Emperor's name happened?" shouted Tarvitz. "How did they get in?"
"I don't know, sir," replied Solothan. "They came from the east."
"We should have had some warning," said Tarvitz. "That's Lucius's sector. Have you seen him at all?"
"Lucius?" asked Solothan. "No. He must have fallen."
Tarvitz shook his head.
"Not likely. I'll have to find him."
"We can't hold out here," said Solothan. "We have to pull back, and we won't be able to wait for you."
Tarvitz nodded, but he knew that he had to try and find Lucius, even if it was just to recover his body. He doubted Lucius could ever really die, but he knew that, amid this carnage, anything was possible.
"Very well," said Tarvitz. "Go. Fall back in good order to the inner domes of the temple. There are barricades there. Go, and don't wait for me."
He put his head briefly over the pillar and fired his bolter, kicking a burst of shots towards Eidolon's Emperor's children, swarming all over the far side of the dome. More covering fire sprayed from his warriors' guns as they began falling back by squads. The dome between him and his goal was littered with bodies, some of them chewed into unrecognizable sprays of torn flesh. He waited until his warriors had put enough distance between them and the enemy and broke from cover. Bolter shots tore up the ground beside him, and he rolled into the cover of a fallen pillar, crawling as fast as he could to reach the passageway that led from the dome and curved around its columned circumference towards the east wing of the Precentor's palace. Lucius was somewhere in these ruins, and Tarvitz had to find him. Loken ducked and threw himself to the floor, skidding along the fire-blackened tiles of the plaza. The palace loomed above him, whirling as Loken spun on his back and fired up at the closest world-eater. One shot caught the warrior in the leg, and he collapsed in a roaring heap. Torgadon leapt upon him, plunging his sword into the traitor's back. Loken climbed to his feet as more fire stuttered across the plaza. He tried to get a bearing on the enemy among the heaps of the dead and the jagged slabs of marble sticking up from the edges of shell craters, but it was impossible. The plaza between the chaos of the palace and the dark mass of the city was infested with world-eaters, charging forwards to exploit the breach made by the Emperor's children.
"There's a whole squad out here," said Torgadon, wrenching his sword from the world-eater. "We're right in the middle of them." "Then we keep going," said Loken.
Back on his feet, he reloaded his bolter as they hurried through the wreckage and charnel heaps, scanning the darkness for movement. Torgadon kept close behind him, sweeping his bolter between chunks of tiling or fallen masonry. Fire snapped around them, and the sounds of battle coming from the palace became ever more terrible, the war cries and explosions tearing through the violent night.
"Down!"
yelled Torgadon, as a burst of plasma fire lanced from the darkness. Loken threw himself to the ground as the searing bolt flashed past him and bored a hole in a slab of fallen stone behind him. A dark shape came at him, and Loken saw the flash of a blade, bringing his bolter up in an instinctive block. He felt chainblade teeth grinding against the metal of his gun and kicked out at his attacker's groin. The world-eater pivoted away from the blow easily, turning to smash Torgadon to the ground with the butt of his chain axe. Torgadon's attack gave Loken a chance to regain his feet, and he threw aside the ruined bolter to draw his own sword. Torgadden wrestled with another world-eater on the ground, but his friend would have to fend for himself, as Loken saw that his opponent was a captain, and not just any captain, but one of the world-eater's best.
"Khan," said Loken, as the warrior attacked.
Khan paused in his attack, and for the briefest moment Loken saw the noble warrior he had spoken with in the Museum of Conquest, before something else swamped it again, something that twisted Khan's face with hatred. That second was enough for Loken, allowing him to dodge back behind a fan of broken stone, jutting from the edge of the crater. Bullets still carved through the air, and somewhere beyond his sight, Torgadden was fighting his own battle, but Loken could not worry about that now.
"What happened, Khan?" cried Loken. "What did they turn you into?"
Khan screamed an incoherent bellow of rage, and leapt towards him with his axe held high. Loken braced his stance and brought his blade up to catch Khan's axe as it slashed towards him, and the two warriors clashed in a desperate battle of strength.
"Khan!"
said Loken through gritted teeth, as the world-eater forced the chain axe's whirling teeth towards his face.
"This is not the man I knew. What have you become?"
As their eyes met, Loken saw Khan's soul and despaired. He saw the warrior who had sworn oaths of brotherhood and pledged himself to the crusade, as he himself had done, the warrior who had seen the terrors and tragedies of the crusade as well as its victories. And he saw the dark madness that had swamped that in bloodshed and betrayals yet to be enacted.
"I am the Eightfold Path," snapped Khan, his every words punctuated by a froth of blood. "No," shouted Loken, pushing the world-eater away. "It doesn't have to be this way."
"It does," said Khan.
"There is no way off the path. We must always go further."
The humanity drained from Khan's face, and Loken knew that the world-eater was truly gone, and that only in death would this battle end. Loken backed away, fending off a flurry of blows from Khan's axe, until he was forced back against a slab of rubble. His foe's axe buried itself in the stone beside him, and Loken slammed the pommel of his sword into Khan's head. Khan rode the blow and smashed his forehead into Loken's face, grabbing his sword arm and wrestling him to the ground. They struggled in the mud like animals, Khan trying to grind Loken's face into the shattered stone, and Loken trying to throw him off. Loken rolled onto his back as he heard the rumble of an engine like an earthquake, and the glare of floodlights stabbed out and threw Khan's outline into silhouette. Knowing what was coming, Loken hammered his fist into Khan's face over and over again, pushing him upright with a hand clasped around his neck. The world-eater struggled in Loken's grip as the light grew stronger and the roaring form of a land raider crested the ridge of rubble behind them like a monster rising from the deep. Loken felt the huge impact as the land raider's dozer blade slammed into Khan, the sharpened prongs at its base punching through the world-eater's chest. He released Khan's body and rolled to the edge of the crater as the land raider rose up, carrying the struggling Khan with it. The mighty tank crashed back down, and Loken pressed his body into the mud as it ground over him, the roaring of its engine passing inches above him. Then it was over. The tank rumbled onwards, carrying the impaled world-eater before it like some gory trophy. Tanks were all around him, the Eye of Horus glaring from their armoured hulls, and Loken recognized the livery they were painted in. The Sons of Horus. For a moment Loken just stared at the force surging towards the palace. Gunfire flared as they drove towards their prize. A hand reached down and grabbed Loken, dragging him, battered and bloody, into cover from the guns of the tanks. He looked up and saw Torgadden, similarly mauled by the encounter with the world-eaters. Torgadden nodded in the direction of the land raider.
"Was that
Khan?" nodded Loken. "He's gone.
Dead?
Maybe. I don't know."
Torgadden looked up at the Sons of Horus spear-tip, driving for the palace.
"I think even Tarvitz might have trouble holding the palace now."
"Then we'll have to hurry."
"Yes. Stay low, and let's keep out of any more trouble," said Torgadden. "Unless Abaddon and Little Horus aren't challenging enough on their own."
"Saul will make them pay for every piece of rubble they capture," said Loken,
pulling himself painfully to his feet. Khan had hurt him, but not so much that he couldn't fight.
"For his sake, let's make that count for something."
The two friends forged through the rubble once again, towards the Makaran Basilica, where lay one last chance of a victory, on Istvan III. The sounds of battle echoed from all around him, and Tarvitz hugged the shadows as he made his careful way through the ruins of the east wing of the palace. Squads of Emperor's children swarmed through the palace grounds, sweeping through the shattered domes and gunfire-riddled rooms as they plunged the knife of their attack into the heart of the defences. Here and there he saw squad markings he recognised and had to fight the ingrained urge to call out to them. But these warriors were the enemy, and there would be no brotherly embrace or comradely welcome were they to discover him. The very obsessiveness of their attack was working in Tarbert's favour, as these warriors possessed the same single-mindedness as Eidolon, fixated on the prize of the palace rather than proper battlefield awareness. For once, Eidolon's flaws were working in his favour, thought Tarbert, as he ghosted through the strobe-lit wastelands of the palace.
"You're going to need to tighten up discipline, Eidolon," he whispered, "or someone's going to make you pay."
The eastern sectors he had assigned Lucius and his men to watch over were bombed-out ruins, the frescoes burned from the walls by the firestorm, and the mighty statue gardens pulverized by constant shelling and the battles that had raged furiously over the past months. To have held out this long was a miracle in itself, and Tarbert was not blind enough to try and fool himself into thinking that it could last much longer. He saw dozens of bodies and checked every one for a sign that the swordsman had fallen. Each body was a warrior he knew, a warrior who had followed him into battle at the palace and trusted that he could lead them to victory. Each set of eyes accused him of their death, but he knew that there was nothing more he could have done. The further eastward he went, the less he encountered the invading Emperor's children, their attack pushing into the centre of the Precentor's palace, rather than spreading out to capture its entirety. Trust Eidolon to go for the glory, rather than standard battlefield practice. "Give me 100 space marines, and I would punish your arrogance," thought Tarbitz. Even as the thought occurred to him, a slow smile spread across his face. He had 100 space marines. True, they were engaged in battle, but if any force of warriors could disengage from battle in good order and hand over to a friendly force in the middle of a desperate firefight, it was the Emperor's children. He crouched in the shadow of a fallen statue and opened a vox channel.
"Solothan," he hissed, "can you hear me?"
Static washed from the vox bead in his ear, and he cursed at the idea of his plan being undone by something as trivial as a failure of communications.
"I hear you, Captain, but we're a little busy right now," said Solothan's voice.
"Understood," said Tarbitz, "but I have new orders for you. Disengage from the fight and hand over to the Lunar Wolves. Let them take the brunt of the fighting, and gather as many warriors as you can rally to you. Then converge on my position. Sir, take the eastern passages along the servants' wing. That should bring you to me without too much trouble. We have an opportunity to hurt these bastards, Solothan, so I need you to get here with all possible speed."
"Understood, sir,"
said Solothan, signing off. Tarbitz froze as he heard a voice say,
"It won't do any good, Saul. The Precentor's palace is as good as lost. Even you should be able to see that."
He looked up and saw Lucius standing in the centre of the dome in front of him, his shimmering sword in one hand and a shard of broken glass in the other. He raised the glass to his face and sliced its razor edge along his cheek, drawing a line of blood from his skin that dripped to the dome's floor.
"Lucius," said Tarbitz,
rising to his feet and entering the dome to meet the swordsman.
"I thought you were dead."
Bright starlight filled the dome, and Tarbitz saw it was filled with the corpses of Emperor's children. Not traitors, but loyalists, and he could see that not one had fallen to a gunshot wound, but had been carved up by a powerful edged weapon. These warriors had been cut apart, and a horrible suspicion began to form in his mind.
"Dead?" laughed Lucius. "Me? Remember what Loken said to me when I humbled him in the practice cages?"
Wary now, Tarbitz nodded.
"He said there was someone out there who could beat you."
"And do you remember what I told him?"
"Yes,"
replied Tarbitz, sliding his hand to the hilt of his broadsword.
"You said, 'Not in this lifetime,' didn't you?"
"You have a good memory," said Lucius, dropping the bloody shard of glass to the floor.
"Who's that latest scar for?"
asked Tarbitz. Lucius smiled, though there was no warmth to it.
"It's for you, Saul."
The great forum of the Makaran Basilica was a desert of ashen bone, for as the virus bombs had dropped, thousands of Isvanians had gathered there in the hope that the Parliament House at one end of the forum would receive them. They had thronged the place and died there, their scorched remains resembling an ancient swamp from which rose the columns that bounded the forum on three sides. On the fourth was the Parliament House itself, befouled by black tendrils of ash that reached up from the forum. The building had been the seat of the Coral City Civilian Parliament, a counterpart to the nobles who had ruled from the Precentor's palace. But the prominent citizens who had taken shelter inside had died as surely as the horde of civilians outside. Locum pushed through the sea of black bones, his sword ready in his hand, as he forged through the thicket of bone. A skull grinned up at him, its burned and empty eye sockets accusing. Behind him, Togaden covered the forum beyond them.
"Wait," said Locum quietly.
Togaden halted and looked round.
"Is it them?"
"I don't know. Maybe,"
said Locum, looking up at the Parliament House. Beyond it he could just see the lines of a spacecraft, a stormbird in Sons of Horus colours.
"Someone landed here, that's for sure."
They continued onwards to the edge of the Parliament building, climbing the smooth marble steps. Its great doors had been thick-studded oak, but they had been eaten away by the virus and burned to ash by the firestorm.
"Shall we?"
asked Torgadon. Locan nodded, suddenly wishing that they had not come here, as a terrible feeling of doom settled on him. He looked at Torgadon and wished he had some fitting words to say to him before they took these last, fateful steps. Torgadon seemed to understand what he was thinking and said,
"Yes, I know. But what choice do we have?"
"None," said Locum, marching through the archway and into the Parliament House. The interior of the building had been protected from the worst of the virus bombing and firestorm, only a few tangled blackened corpses lying sprawled among the dark wood panels and furnishings. The walls of the circular building were adorned with faded frescoes of the Coral City's magnificent past, telling the tales of its growth and conquests. The benches and voting tables of the Parliament were arranged around a central stage with a lectern from which the debates were led. On the stage, in front of the lectern, stood Ezekiel Abaddon and Horus Aximand.
"You betrayed us," said Tarvitz,
the hurt and disappointment almost too much to bear.
"You killed your own men and let Eidolon and his warriors into the palace, didn't you?"
"I did," said Lucius, swinging his sword in loops around his body as he loosened his muscles in preparation for the fight Tarvitz knew must come next. "And I'd do it again, in a heartbeat." Tarvitz circled the edge of the dome, his steps in time with those of the swordsman. He had no illusions as to the outcome of this fight. Lucius was the preeminent blademaster of the Legion, perhaps all the Legions. He knew he could not defeat Lucius, but this betrayal demanded retribution. Honor must be satisfied.
"Why, Lucius?" asked Tarvitz.
"How can you ask me that, Saul?"
demanded Lucius, drawing the circle closer, and, step by step, the distance between the two warriors shrank.
"I am only here thanks to my misplaced acquaintance with you. I know what the Lord Commander and Fabius offered you. How could you turn such an opportunity down?"
"It was an abomination, Lucius,"
said Tarvitz, knowing he had to keep Lucius talking for as long as he could,
"to tamper with the gene seed. How can you possibly believe that the Emperor would condone such a thing?"
"The Emperor?"
laughed Lucius.
"Are you so sure he would disapprove? Look at what he did to create the Primarchs. Aren't we the result of genetic manipulation? The experiments Fabius is conducting are the logical next link in that evolutionary chain. We are a superior race, and we must establish that superiority over any lesser beings that stand in our way."
"Even your fellow warriors,"
spat Tarvitz, gesturing to the corpses around the dome's circumference with the blade of his sword. Lucius shrugged.
"Even them. I am going to rejoin my legion, and they tried to stop me. What choice did I have? Just like you are going to try and stop me."
"You'll kill me too?"
asked Tarvitz.
"After all the years we've fought together."
"Don't try and appeal to my sense of fond reminiscences, Saul,"
warned Lucius.
"I am better than you, and I am going to achieve great things in the service of my legion. Neither you or any foolish sense of misplaced loyalty are going to stop me."
Lucius lifted the blade of his sword and dropped into a fighting crouch as Tarvitz approached him. The dome seemed suddenly silent as the two combatants circled one another, each searching for a weakness in the other's defences. Tarvitz drew his combat knife in his left hand and reversed the blade, knowing he would need as many blades between him and Lucius as humanly possible. Tarvitz knew there were no more words to be spoken. This could only end in blood. Without warning, he leapt towards Lucius, thrusting with the smaller blade, but even as he attacked, he saw that Lucius had been expecting it. Lucius swayed aside and swept the hilt of his sword down, smashing the knife from his hand. The swordsman ducked as Tarvitz turned on his heel and slashed high with his sword. Tarvitz's blade cut only air, and Lucius hammered his elbow into his side. He danced away, expecting Lucius to land a blow, but the swordsman merely smiled and danced around him lightly on the balls of his feet. Lucius was playing with him, and he felt his anger mount in the face of such mockery. Lucius advanced towards Tarvitz, darting in with the speed of a striking snake to thrust at his stomach. Tarvitz blocked the thrust, rolling his wrists over Lucius's blade and slashing for his neck, but the swordsman had anticipated the move and nimbly dodged the blow. Tarvitz attacked suddenly, his blade a flashing blur of steel that forced Lucius back step by step. Lucius parried a vicious slash aimed at his groin, spinning with a laugh to launch a lightning riposte at his foe. Tarvitz saw the blade cut the air towards him, knowing he was powerless to prevent it landing. He hurled himself back, but felt a red-hot line of agony as the energized edge bit deep into his side. He clamped a hand to his side as blood spilled down his armor, gasping in pain before his armor dispensed stimulants that blocked it. Tarvitz backed away from Lucius, and the swordsman followed with a grin of anticipation.
"If that's the best you've got, Saul, then you'd best give up now," smirked Lucius. "I promise I'll make it quick."
"I was about to say the same thing, Lucius,"
gasped Tarvitz, lifting his sword once again. The two warriors clashed once more, their swords shimmering streaks of silver and blue as coruscating sparks spat from their blades. Tarvitz fought with every ounce of courage, strength, and skill he could muster, but he knew it was hopeless. Lucius parried his every attack with ease and casually landed cut after cut on his flesh, enough to draw blood and hurt, but not enough to kill. Blood gathered in the corner of his mouth as he staggered away from yet another wounding blow.
"A hit!" snickered Lucius. "A palpable hit!"
Tarvitz knew he was fighting with the last of his reserves, and the fight could not go on much longer. Soon Lucius would tire of his poor sport and finish him, but perhaps he had held him here for long enough.
"Had enough," coughed Tarvitz. "You don't have to die here."
Lucius cocked his head to one side as he advanced towards him and said,
"You're serious, aren't you? You actually think you can beat me?"
Tarvitz nodded and spat blood.
"Come on and have a go, if you think you can kill me."
Lucius leapt forwards to attack, and Tarvitz dropped his sword and leapt to meet him. Surprised by such an obviously suicidal move, Lucius was a fraction of a second too late to dodge Tarvitz's attack. The two warriors clashed in the air, and Tarvitz smashed his fist into the swordsman's face. Lucius turned his head to rob the blow of its force, but Tarvitz gave him no chance to right himself as they fell to the floor, and pistoned his fist into his former comrade's face. Lucius's sword skittered away, and they fought with fists and elbows, knees and feet. At such close quarters, skill with a blade was irrelevant, and Tarvitz let his hate and anger spill out in every thunderous hammer blow he landed. They rolled and grappled like brawling street thugs, Tarvitz punching Lucius with powerful blows that would have killed a mortal man a dozen times over, the swordsman struggling to push Tarvitz clear.
"I also remember what Loken taught you the very first time he brought you down," gasped Tarvitz as he saw movement at the edge of the dome. "Understand your foe and do whatever is necessary to bring him down."
He released his grip on Lucius and rolled clear, pushing himself as far away from the swordsman as he could. Lucius sprang to his feet in an instant, scrambling across the floor to retrieve his weapon.
"Now, Solothan," shouted Tarvitz, "kill him! He betrayed us all!"
He watched as Lucius turned towards the dome's entrance, seeing the warriors Solothan had rallied and brought to him. Solothan obeyed Tarvitz's command instantly, as a good emperor's children should, and the dome was suddenly filled with the bark of gunfire. Lucius dived out of the way, but even he wasn't quick enough to avoid a volley of bolter shells. Lucius jerked and danced in the fusillade, sparks and blood flying from his armor. He rolled across the floor, scrabbling for a hole in the wall, blasted by the months of battle as the gunfire of the loyalist emperor's children tore into him.
"Kill him!"
yelled Tarvitz, but Lucius was faster than he would have believed possible, diving from the dome as shells tore up scorched frescoes around him. Tarvitz pushed himself to his feet and staggered over towards where Lucius had escaped. Beyond the dome, the outer precincts of the palace were a nightmarish landscape of craters and blackened ruins. A pall of smoke hung over the battlefield the palace had become, and he smashed his fist into the wall in frustration as he saw that the swordsman had vanished.
"Captain Tarvitz!"
said Solothan.
"Reporting as ordered."
Tarbitz turned from his search for Lucius, pushing his frustrations aside and focusing on the more immediate matter of counterattacking Eidolon's warriors.
"My thanks, Solothan. I owe you my life," he said.
The warrior nodded as Tarbitz picked up a fallen bolter and checked the magazine to make sure he had a full load.
"Now come on," he said grimly. "Let's show these bastards how the real Emperor's children fight."